Hello, everybody, and good morning and good evening and whatever time it is where you are, that one. Welcome to the Digitally Uploaded podcast. I'm Matt Sainsbury, Editor-in-Chief of digitallydownloaded.net. And with me this week, it's just Alan. Hello, Alan.
Hi, you've been stuck with me.
It's never stuck with you. But yes, it's a quiet one. It's just you and me this week after a couple of weeks with lots of people on.
I've actually killed everyone on the team. And that's that's why this has happened. I've been here to hijack every single part of the DDNet world.
It's part of your plans of world domination.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. That and the whole injecting carrots with serum to make super soldiers, that's part two.
That's your rabbits, right?
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely. Feed them super carrots and there will be
I've played Jazz Jackrabbit. I know how that works.
Yeah, rabbits are scary at the best of times, so add extra carrot and they go ballistic.
It's like catnip, but carrot nip. Alrighty. I'm gonna back out. It's just the Matt podcast this week.
That's a great start. All right, everybody, we'll go to some Mickey music. We'll save you the nonsense that we're talking about, and we'll come back and we'll talk about games and stuff. Welcome back, everybody. Okay, so DLC and fighting games. Alan here has been playing Tekken, we've started picking up Tekken again as a result of Noctis being added to the roster, which is good for Tekken and I guess good for getting value out of the game if you're a consumer and stuff.
You can tell that Matt's not the biggest fan of Tekken by the way he's talking about it right now. It's making me very happy.
Yeah, not the biggest fan of Tekken, but if people are still playing it, power to them. But the reason we wanted to talk about it is it seems that fighting games are kind of the most aggressive place where DLC stuff happens. I guess it's because you can kind of break the game down into tiny little components via, you know, individual fighters and stuff. It seems to incentivize developers and publishers to add a lot of stuff to these games post-launch via DLC. And I guess that's important for keeping the community going and the game going as long as possible as well. But what do you think about it all, Alan? I mean, because once upon a time, you'd buy a fighting game, but it'd have a half dozen, or a little bit more than a half dozen, a dozen or so characters on it, and that would be it, basically, for the game. Do you think it's a good thing that now you buy a fighting game, you get 20-odd characters or whatever in the roster, and then you can purchase another 20 over the next 2 years?
Well, so fighting games are fairly modular, yeah, which means that I don't have the issue with the idea of characters coming in the future as long as there is enough content in the game to begin with. So you can look at Tekken 7 and say that's okay because of the amount of characters and the amount of stages and the amount of, you know, stuff that you get in that game from just buying the disc is pretty good. But then conversely, if you want to look at Street Fighter V on release, that game was almost devoid of everything except for the versus mode. And for someone who didn't have amazing internet at the time, it was sort of impossible to play. While that game has been made much, much better, like much, much better by the inclusion of, you know, I think we're up to 12 new characters now. I did still always prefer the initial experience to be incredible, which Tekken was, because Tekken has, you know, a great roster of characters. It's got, you know, all this different stuff. It's got this incredible story mode that's really dumb, but it's really, really good fun because it's ridiculous and insane, and Lars is in it, which is good.
I guess that's the thing, isn't it? It's like Street Fighter is a good example because the initial roster left off some real series favorites, Sakura and so on. And Sakura is a
Sakura and everyone else.
Well, I mean, I don't actually pay attention to many of
the who ones. Matt likes. Who could Matt possibly like in the roster?
I don't actually really know many of the other characters from Street Fighter because I basically only play as Sakura when I play that game. But the point is that she and other popular ones I know were left off the initial roster, and it seemed that, you know, Capcom was deliberately leaving them off so that they could sell them as DLC bits afterwards. Compared to Tekken, the base roster is basically everybody that any fan of Tekken could want anyway. There may be one or two exceptions, but I can't think of any. Point is that the actual base roster of Tekken is so comprehensive that you can't really begrudge them for adding, you know, jokey characters like Noctis or one or two other kind of new characters down the track. So I think that's a good thing.
Awesome. Yeah. I mean, it's a continuation of the old Soul Calibur 2 thing where they had, you know, Heihachi in the PlayStation version, Link in the GameCube version, and some idiot character that Todd McFarlane. Very different styles. Wow, yeah, okay.
Spawn.
Oh, yeah, everyone's favorite Spawn. Oh, yeah. I just can't wait to play Spawn. Yay.
I mean, Spawn was better than Heihachi. I can't stand that dude.
What?
Yeah, I went there.
The man is so angry that he just makes electricity when he punches. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Also, he has a bear. I like the bear.
It'll be interesting to see if Soul Calibur, which way that goes. The good thing is it's obviously...
I'm going to tell you right now, it's going to be the best thing ever made.
I mean, play that game. You would expect that it would have a pretty comprehensive roster up front because it is by the same company that produced Tekken, and they're not Capcom, which is good for everybody that likes fighting games.
Wow. But also, yeah.
It's true. You all know it. It's true. You might love Street Fighter, but it's still true. It'll be interesting. I think from what I saw when I played the demo, most of the characters were blanked out, obviously, at the time, because we were limited to, I think it was 4 or 5, yeah. And one of them was a new character. But from looking at the blanked out ones, it looks like there are going to be characters missing, which is not good. I get the sense that that is not going to be the whole Soul Calibur cast in the initial release.
I'd rather have like less characters and have them have like good and interesting and diverse move lists than have the Soul Calibur 5 problem where everyone sucked.
And Yeah, but I'm going to be very pissed off if my favorite characters are not in that roster. That's for sure.
Talon
mostly. Yeah, yeah. I mean, Sophitia is there, which is good. I like Sophitia.
She's the main person.
Yeah, so
it'd
she's
be kind of ridiculous anyway. If they had a Soul Calibur game but no Sophitia. Or actually, yeah, they did that because Soul Calibur 5 had her idiot children who just sucked.
You never know because, I wouldn't put it past Capcom down the track to remove Ryu from from Street Fighter at some point and DLC it in later.
I remember when when Street Fighter 3 came out, it was just Ryu and Ken left over, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah.
So, like, everyone else is brand new, and that was awesome because it meant that I didn't have to deal with Chun-Li's bullshit.
What about some of the other DLC stuff that gets added into fighting games? What are your thoughts on...
Literally everything by Capcom is usually a bad time.
No, but what about stages and stuff? Are you cool with DLC?
As long as, like, it doesn't segregate the online community, I think it's fine. Like, I don't really care. Especially with stages as well, like, it's... The stage is pretty just universally, like, it's there. It doesn't really impact you unless it's got wall bounce mechanics or something like that, like in Tekken. I don't really have a problem with it. Like, whatever. If it comes after the game's out for, like, 3 or 4 months, they've obviously not been working on it while the game's been coming out. So, yeah, it doesn't really leave a super bad taste in my mouth. As long as they don't add loot boxes to fighting games, that's okay.
Well, we were about to get to that. Loot boxes. I mean, one of the trends is obviously in fighting games to go free to play and stuff as well. Offer a free to play version where you have like one character with the base download, and you either get to try some of the other ones out on a rotational basis, or you can just purchase additional characters outright. That would suggest that down the track, loot boxes and things will probably become a part of fighting games, which would be disappointing, I imagine. I could see Capcom being the first one to try it on.
You could get cat ears for Ryu.
Yeah, well, I mean, the loot boxes might be mostly for costumes and other aesthetic options, which would, I don't know, do you think people get upset by that?
I mean, I'm going to get upset by that.
That's the most interesting thing, isn't it? Like, people, and even not looking at loot boxes, looking at something like Dead or Alive with its 7 or 8 season passes, each one at $150 or so. But almost all the stuff in those season passes were costumes, and those were entirely optional. You didn't have to, I mean, you got no advantage to buying them. They didn't add anything to the game other than giving you some variety in the character designs, and the base game already had like a half dozen costumes for each character anyway, so I found it interesting that there were people that got upset about that as though they were somehow forced to buy these things. And I just wonder if loot boxes were to come to fighting games, even for something as simple as the aesthetics, do you think people would
get around it? It's like, it's a very predatory tactic to use loot boxes because it hones in on that same thing that, roulette wheels have. So people would get around it, but I don't think they'd be around it in a moral or, like, positive sense. It would just be incredibly damaging to a lot of things. And I don't know if you remember, but there was a little game called Star Wars Battlefront, and that went very, very badly, very, very fast because people were like, this is dumb, don't do this.
But yeah, that shoved a whole lot of, like, critical stuff behind, like, loot boxes.
Exactly. And I'm worried that Capcom isn't smart enough to realize that's a bad idea.
Yeah, but in theory, it wouldn't be a problem if the loot boxes were purely for aesthetic items or even stages.
Absolutely. Stages should not be hidden behind random stuff. That should be like Smash Brothers sort of thing where you can, meet certain parameters and get it as a reward. I don't really care about cosmetics, but I don't like them that much. So I like my characters to be clean and to not have stupid things on them, because it means that you can read them easier. And I think that it's more important than being, you know, a cute half demon, half cat thing. That's dumb. It's banned. I'm going to ban every single fighting game if they do that.
Well, that's why you like Tekken, because all the characters are so ugly, it doesn't matter. You don't want to aesthetic
okay.
them.
Okay. Okay.
You don't want additional characters for them because they were so ugly and boring.
They're actually amazing and cool and rad.
No, they're not.
This is the end of the podcast. I'm leaving.
We'll go to some music, I think, before Alan throttles me. We'll get
find a way to do it through the power of the internet.
Yes, he'll reach out through the camera. It'll be
that terrible movie about Facebook that's like also kind of real life now.
The Social Network.
No, not The Social Network. The one where people died.
Oh, yes, I know which one you're talking about. That really shitty horror.
Terrible.
Yeah.
Awful.
Horror film. It was really bad. Like, really, really bad. I think it's on Netflix.
I think it's called, like, You Have a Message or something.
Yeah, it's really...
No, it's called Unfriended.
Unfriended, that's right. Yes, I have seen that. I think it's on Netflix, which is funny because as terrible as it is, it's not the worst thing on Netflix because Death Note, the American version, is on Netflix. And
well, like,
that's the worst thing that's ever been made. On that note, let's cheer everybody up with some music from Dragon Quest. You will recognize this one for sure if you've ever played a JRPG ever. Yeah, it's a pretty stupid music. Welcome back, everybody. Okay, so let's talk about Fortnite. Fortnite's been in the news quite a lot this last week or so. Firstly, the mobile version of Fortnite came out.
Which, can we just be real for a second, not actually talking about the game, but technically that is incredibly impressive. Like, to get that game running on a phone and have it looking as well as it does, like, it's an absolute marvel. Very, very excited to see what the future of mobile gaming is, if that can be done on a phone with that level of competency.
And Alan kind of just sums up why Fortnite seems to be doing pretty well on mobile. It seems to be winning over a lot of people, both for its technical proficiency and the fact it plays pretty damn well despite being a mobile game, which is not... I mean, you don't generally pick up a mobile phone and think action shooter game thing, but this... this one is causing people, I think, to think about that in a different way, which is good for mobile gaming, I guess, and good for people who are like Fortnite. They can play it pretty much anywhere. And indeed they are, because schools and stuff are having trouble with kids playing Fortnite when they should be doing maths. And, you know, as much as I like people loving their games, I would suggest that perhaps kids should put down their phones and actually do their maths.
Everyone did this, though. It's not that Fortnite is the new thing to cause kids to do this. I don't know if you remember, but Pokemon exists.
Yeah, I know.
Tamagotchi exists.
I remember back in the day, actually, Tamagotchi was very much that, like, it got banned from our schools because kids were too busy playing with these bloody things, and it was disrupting classes. And then Pokemon actually caused, like, fights in schools.
Yeah, no, so arguably as well, like, Fortnite's pretty fine when you consider that there was, like, a Marvel Cabal in my school, and it was, like, an actual, like, black market. It was really, really bad.
Ah, we had Pogs. Remember Pogs?
You might not have been. Alf, but he's in Pog form.
You might not have been.
I do know what Pogs are. I do not.
Yeah, yeah. Pogs were massive. Pogs were massive, and it really was a, like, there was this whole underground market, and everything had a trade value, and people, you'd play each other for these bloody things, and they'd win, and then there'd be tears, and yeah. Oh yeah, those were the days.
Worth $50, but they're actually just little shitty pieces of plastic.
Yeah, that was a fascinating hobby, that one was. But anyway, point is, these things have been around forever and a day, and it looks like Fortnite is the new one that kids are all obsessed with, and
yep. And as with anything that the kids are obsessed with, we have an article here by Nine News, which I'd like to read a couple of excerpts from, if that's all right with you, Matt.
Be my guest, Alan.
Worried parents are searching for answers as the world begins to catch up to the issues surrounding gaming addiction. Mum Jacqueline's sons, Ryan and Dylan, are fans of the game. She allows them to play only on the condition that their homework comes first. So, like, this mum is just doing good parenting.
Yeah. I know. I don't know how they managed to turn that into something bad, but yep, they have.
She's done a good job with that. Like, why is that negative?
Yeah, it's like, oh my God, the kid has a hobby after they finish their homework. It's like, oh no,
the world's ending. And then it goes to another child called Michael, another 11-year-old, who said he felt addicted.
Yes, there's a...
Felt addicted.
Yes, I know. It's ridiculous, and those are kind of articles really don't help for a number of reasons. Actually, in more serious tones, the problem with articles like that is that they distract from
the very real discussion that we do need to be having about this sort of thing. Exactly.
Yeah. Exactly. So, like. Addiction is a real thing. Like, video game addiction is absolutely something that we should be definitely talking about. Not just video games. Addiction in general is a topic that we need to be understanding better and communicating about better. And as a society, we need to have better ways of handling various addictions, whether it's video games, casino, gambling, alcohol, drugs, whatever, you know. Addiction is addiction, and it's a serious topic. Articles like this make light of that, because the immediate thing that you do when you read these is start to laugh at them because they're ridiculous and they're poorly researched and they don't actually have any grounding in any kind of reality. Like, a kid feeling like he's addicted is not addiction, yeah, necessarily.
Some kid being like, hey, I've got a problem.
yeah, it's like saying, you know, I'm feeling a little bit down today. That's not depression. You know, these are different things. And to call something addictive because you happen to have spent like 6 or 7 hours playing it in a day, or even you had this week where it's new and exciting and you played it for more time than you probably should have, that doesn't make you addicted necessarily. So that's a serious topic that this article basically craps all over, and that's really annoying. The other thing that's annoying, and this is something that's been talked about a lot with regards to Fortnite, is the violent side of things. Like, one of the other concerns that everybody has beyond the addiction thing is that this game is fundamentally violent, and therefore it's encouraging kids to be violent themselves and all of that mess. And we've discussed that a couple of times on the podcast, but it's worth talking about again, because firstly, violence in video games is something we need to talk about. There is a real issue in the industry where the only way that narratives seem to be able to be told, or the only way that experiences seem to be able to be expressed in video games, is through violence. And the number of games that aren't violent on some level is tiny. And that's an issue, because any other art medium does not have that same utter reliance on violence. But to go out and say that, you know, if you play this game, you're going to be a violent person as a result is ridiculous. And again, it cheapens the topic to try and argue this. So we should be having a much more nuanced discussion about violence in video games. But we keep getting drawn back to this, does it cause people to be violent or not? Which is not, it's not the topic. It's not the point. It's not the issue. It's, it annoys me so much, because it just limits everything we need to talk about with video games and violence. And I hate it. I hate that these articles happen and the discussion gets drawn to things like, does Fortnite turn you into a serial killer? No, it doesn't. It's not going to ever. But is violence in Fortnite a thing that we need to talk about? Yes, it is.
Yeah, absolutely. I think my favorite thing about this article, though, is that they get a psychiatrist in to talk about, addiction. And he states another big problem is playing to excess of their real-world activities. So there's a detriment in their schooling or in their healthy sleep pattern. When the mother of the first two children said that they're only allowed to play after their homework, so, like, it doesn't sound like there's a problem at all.
Yeah, those kids are not addicted to Fortnite.
They're just playing
on any level. They're not. They're just playing a game as a hobby. Big deal. Like, I play games as hobbies. It's, you know, I get my work done. I go and play a game. It's not addiction. It's just normal life. It's like going out and playing football after you finish your homework.
It's like going out and playing a football. Matt says.
I said it's like going out and playing football.
Oh,
don't misquote me, Alan. That's very rude.
It's like going out and playing a football. I'm gonna
play football. Oh,
football. Yeah, I don't know. I've been playing a lot of Vermintide 2 recently because that game.
Are you addicted, Alan?
I'm addicted. Yeah, I did like an hour and a half of study, and I was like, you know, I'm gonna make some dinner for myself. I'm gonna play half an hour of Vermintide, and then go back to study. And I was like, oh no, my bones are becoming rats now.
Well, better call Channel 9.
Better call Channel 9. They're going to have to tell me that I'm going insane. Well, like, this is also not the first time that Channel 9 has done something stupid like this, though. And it's very frustrating to see, like, how just stupid it all is. And I don't know if you have seen it, but there is a Jim Sterling Jimquisition thing on a mod that was made to recreate Adelaide, like the South Australian city of Adelaide. In, I believe, like Unreal Engine or something. And
it was an original game in development. It was meant to be like a GTA set in real Adelaide.
It wasn't really meant to be GTA. It was like more of a recreation just in general. There was no way to shoot or anything like that. So, yeah, it was very, very good at, you know, twisting that sort of words. And that's what we're saying as well. Like, the issue here is not that there's a discussion on video game violence. The issue here is that it's being tainted by people who are absolutely using it as a platform to get clicks or as a platform to, like, appeal to this, you know, aging demographic who are afraid of media that they don't understand, which is...
Yeah. I will say, though, one thing that also frustrates me is the way that the industry responds to stuff like this, like the games industry itself. And it really annoys me because... these articles are nonsense, and anybody halfway rational recognizes that they're nonsense. But every time one of these articles happen, the industry gets so defensive about it. And why, I don't understand why they can't just ignore it for the nonsense that it is. Because everybody, every industry out there gets some kind of hit piece on them at one stage or another from a current affair. And It boggles my mind that the industry can't be mature enough to present a much more professional response to this stuff to the rest of the public, because ultimately it's our responsibility as people in the industry to point out to people who aren't in the industry or to highlight what this industry is about. And I go back to that horrible White House violence video that they did a couple of weeks ago. And the response of the industry was to pull together a video looking at to highlight all the good stuff that happens in the video game. And it was snarky, it was sarcastic, and it was showing, for God knows why, games like The Last of Us as examples of games that aren't violent. And it's ridiculous. The response that the industry puts forward to this stuff is not helping our own cause, because it makes us all look like immature idiots to people who aren't, you know, watching the games industry. So... yeah, something like Channel 9's article comes around, and I know it's a little bit ironic given that we're actually talking about it on this podcast, but people need to not respond to this crap in the way that they have. They don't need to go out and find a billion articles proving that video games don't cause violence. That research is out there, and anybody who's rational about it will find it and understand it. that the hit piece is going to keep coming as the industry continues to become more prominent, and how we handle that and how we present the industry to people who aren't inside it is going to be really important to continue to legitimize the games industry as an entertainment form and as an art form.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely.
Boy, I ranted a lot in that section. Had a lot to say, which is funny because I haven't even played Fortnite. Ha! I have no idea what Fortnite is, really. I know it's a Battle Royale game, and I know what Battle Royale games are.
It was a critical disaster originally, and then it had a Battle Royale mode, and then it made $1 billion.
Oh, is that what happened? Because I remember it came out, and everyone was like, and they moved on. But then, and everybody was still playing PUBG or PUBG or, I don't know.
PUBG. It's the sequel to Paddington.
Yeah, I don't know how people pronounce that, but people all went back to that. But all of a sudden, over the last couple of weeks, everyone was playing Fortnite instead, and it was like, oh, where did that come from? So it was a Battle Royale mode was added to it.
Yeah.
Did not know that. Okay.
And it made a lot of money, as you can probably tell.
Well, that's good for the developers of it.
Yeah, it's been like in development for 6 years or something like that as well. So
yeah, it's always good to see. Yeah, it's always good to see good hard work rewarded. It's not my kind of game, as anybody who knows me would know. But, yeah, good on them. Congratulations to Fortnite. And enjoy the hit pieces. That means that you actually count for something, like you matter. If you didn't matter, there wouldn't be a hit piece. You know?
Kirby is the true violent video game. Ban Kirby.
Yes, Kirby. And speaking of Kirby, we've got Kirby music because, yeah, if anything is going to get you addicted, listening to this music will get you addicted because it's so happy. Just so happy. We'll be right back. Welcome back, everybody. As usual, with a third, well, typically with a third section of the podcast, we talk about one particular game and go in depth with it. We're not going to do that this week because we had a burning desire to talk about something else. Co-op games, because it's been a pretty good week for co-op. There was Far Cry 5 came out, and it has co-op, which is good for people that like shooting far-right religious people in the head as a team. That should be a hobby we all have, really. The other one is that Prison one, A Way Out, and it is a really interesting one in terms of the co-op and the way that the co-op works, because it's you need to play online, but it's split screen because you need to be able to see what your buddy is doing. You can only play it in co-op with somebody else. Thankfully, if you buy a copy of the game, your buddy can play without having a copy of the game themselves, so it's quite easy to get a multiplayer game going with anybody that's on your friend list. And it's really worth it because, yeah, it's probably the most interesting example of co-op in some time, would you say, Alan? I would.
Yeah, it's probably, well, I guess I have to say it now as well then. I don't know. I'm very interested in it. I'm probably going to buy it as soon as I can. But yeah, I've been into that game since the moment I saw Joseph Farah's yelling about the Oscars at the Game Awards. So he sold me on that pretty hard. yeah, no, the game looks really, really good. And I think that co-op games have, they sort of died, I want to say, in the like early 2010s. Like quite hard, unfortunately, and unless you played on a Wii and played Wii Sports, you're pretty much not going to be playing couch co-op. But recently it's made quite a big sort of little resurgence, and I'm very happy with that, because as someone who, you know, is in a sort of environment that's conducive to that sort of thing, this is really, really good. It's a good time for everyone, and I will absolutely play Tricky Towers with three other people anytime that I can, because Tricky Towers is incredible.
Yeah, I mean, there are quite a few games that are just terrible as single-player experiences, but as co-op suddenly become...
Sea of Thieves.
Well, Sea of Thieves. I was actually thinking Resident Evil 5.
Absolutely.
I think that's a perfect example.
By itself.
Yeah, you can't play Resident Evil 5 and have fun by yourself. It's actually scientifically impossible and proven to be scientifically impossible. But in co-op, it suddenly becomes quite decent because... it stops being, I guess, a horror game or pretending to be a horror game, and you can just enjoy the shooty bangs. And most of the way that the combat is designed in that game just gets better when you've got somebody, you know, watching your back and stuff, and
you kind of chat with each other as
you play.
Around it, and there's no way in hell that a AI companion who you're shouting "come on" at will ever be anywhere near as good as an actual human being who can do things.
Yeah, especially back then. I mean, AI's got better with the PlayStation 4, and there are games that have, you know, the buddy mechanic thrown in and work better now. But, I mean, Resident Evil Revelations 2 being an example of just how far AI's kind of come since Resident Evil 5. But
so much better.
definitely back on the PS3, AI buddies were not up to it, PS3 and beforehand, so... it made a lot of sense to try and play those games in multiplayer if possible. For me, though, the game that I love the most in co-op is Earth Defense Force, and basically all of those games, any of those games that have co-op options in them. Oh, God, I love those. They're just so... I mean, they're good fun as single player anyway, because it's got that whole schlocky B-grade monster vibe to it.
It's ridiculous. It's inherently ridiculous, and when you have more than one person involved, it embraces the ridiculous even more.
Exactly. It just gets more and more ridiculous. Like, and it actually surprisingly has some pretty decent like teamwork stuff involved in it, especially the one that I've been playing a lot with my brother, 4.1, I think it is.
Yeah, the newish one that's on like every single console and PC right now. Yeah,
the most recent one, I think. And there's four different classes, and they're all very different to one another. And my brother likes to play the heavy armored tank guy.
Low boy.
Yeah, well, I play as the flying one, the flying class.
The flying class is probably the most fun.
And it's really great being able to work together. Like, he gets to go and do what he needs to with some of the ground forces while I'm off scouting or knocking around the airborne enemies and stuff. And it just works, and it's just much more fun, again, than making your way through it in single player, because you've got somebody to share the experience with, I think is the point.
Yeah.
And
it's always fun because you can laugh at things. You can turn, like most games, into a more fun time by doing it with other people around you. Like,
yeah, for sure.
A lot of time that you can spend with a single player game, you can have someone next to you like commenting on it as well with you, and it's just as much fun, if not more fun, I find. Plus, you can mock things that happen, which I often do, because I'm a nitpicky little boy.
yeah, and it's nice to have an alternative to competitive multiplayer. Like, every game that's out there basically tries to throw competitive multiplayer in, and because that's where most people play, and that's
the line.
That's where the kind of the esports scenes comes from and all that kind of stuff. And we were just talking about Fortnite in the thing before, and it's a competitive multiplayer game and all that kind of stuff. And that's good, that's fine. But it's nice to have a game that doesn't make you compete with your buddy or whatever as well, because you don't always feel like you want to. Like, I'm not always in a competitive mood. And
you're not like me, then. I must win.
Well, if I am in a competitive mood, I'm in a competitive mood to try and beat my buddy in co-op, get more kills, get more knockouts, get more points, all of that kind of stuff.
It's just the time when Alan goes into a little Vermi rant, because Vermintide 2 is the best thing ever for that, because it, like, the entire game is very co-op heavy, of course, because it's Left 4 Dead. It's just Left 4 Dead. But at the end, you get to see all the different stats of like how many things that you killed, how many like specials you killed, how many like range kills you had, stuff like that, and it compares everyone's stat in like a sort of very easy to read graph, and and that's quite a good way to be like, yeah, I did the best out of everyone at range kills, or I did the best, you know, work against special enemies. So I like that sort of thing, where it's still very much a co-op experience and everyone's working together, and it would be impossible without, you know, an entire team working together to begin with. But having like that extra layer of, yeah, I did better than like other people in this situation, which means that I did my job well, which is good.
So is Vermintide a PvE
game? Yeah, it's completely PvE.
Right. Okay. I thought, for some reason, I thought it was like, you know, one squad against the other. I thought it was like For Honor or whatever.
No, it's legit just Left 4 Dead, but more melee focused.
That's nice. I mean, yeah, if I get a chance, I'll check it out at some point. But
I'm sure it will come out on PS4 or something.
What you mentioned reminded me actually of another game that I play a lot in multiplayer, but have never played once in single player, and that's Gauntlet.
The re-release.
The new
that's really Gauntlet. Good. That game's
It is, but at the end of each kind of quest, once all your characters are dead, because you play the endless mode, once everyone's finally been knocked out, it actually shows you, you know, who contributed the most and who got the most kills and stuff. And it's fun. Like, that's, you end up doing some stupid stuff and actually compromising the success of the team, because you're trying to get more kills than your buddies and stuff. And it adds that extra level of manic energy to the game, which is good.
It's the very high-key panic. I need to be better than everyone else, but also, what have I done?
Yeah, it's like, I'm working with you, but I'm not your mate.
Yeah.
I love it. I really like those kind of co-op experiences that have just that edge of competitive play in there. And
I do have to be the best at everything that I do, of course. I will
be. The more games that do that stuff, the better. And it's nice to see, I think, developers are bringing it back. I think part of it is possibly because more and more people have headsets and stuff now. They've just got them from consoles and whatever. And so you can have that kind of communication experience while playing multiplayer. I think for a long time, the developers couldn't assume that everybody playing had a headset.
Yeah.
So competitive multiplayer worked better in that kind of environment, because you didn't need to communicate as much, especially like Call of Duty's and whatever. If you get to the competitive tier, if you get to the esports tier or whatever, of course you have to work as a team. But if you're just shooting stuff, it doesn't really matter. But in co-op, it's impossible to play without being able to communicate with your buddy. So I think the fact that everybody has headsets these days has enabled developers to assume that they can put co-op into their online games, which is good.
Yeah, no, it's real good. I'm very happy with it. The future is here, except for Nintendo, where you need a phone app and a connector and several other things.
Well, yeah, I mean, one of the things that has annoyed me about Nintendo...
They don't know what they're doing with anything online related. Yes.
Well, it's like, yeah, well, they don't know what they're doing with everything online related, and they just refuse to do the online co-op thing.
Yeah.
Like,
because Kirby is online.
Hyrule Warriors and Fire Emblem Warriors, no co-op. And
really?
I thought that... Yeah, no.
Oh.
As far as... Cool. Oh, wait. Hyrule has co-op local, but not online.
Yeah, okay.
On the Wii U. I don't think the 3DS version does. I don't know if the Switch version... The Switch version will, and it will have split screen, which is good. And I don't think Fire Emblem Warriors has any co-op at all. But why they can't just put online co-op into these things just drives me nuts. I don't know if that's Nintendo or Koei Tecmo, actually, because I look quite a few of Koei's recent games.
Like, we don't have the means to do this.
Well, quite a few of Koei's games recently, Warriors games, have not had co-op at all. Dynasty Warriors 9 didn't. Warriors All-Stars didn't. So that has been a point of irritation for people, a few people recently. But I have to check if Attack on Titan 2 does, because that game will be great in co-op if it does.
Yeah.
Anyway, absolutely. That was a digression. Point is, Nintendo needs to do better with online co-op, because for a company that focuses really heavily on the single-player experience, as Nintendo does, it does a decent enough job of throwing co-op in so that parents can play with their kids by making like the second player have a kind of minor role but still feel like they're important. Was it Mario Odyssey that allowed the kid to collect the stars while they were playing?
That was Galaxy.
Galaxy, sorry.
Yeah, but that like every kid playing that knew they were getting just absolutely shafted with the worst role possible because it was...
Yeah, and it looks like Toad Treasure Tracker that's coming up has a similar thing where the parent would be the one responsible for pretty much everything that's happening, but the kid can play around with manipulating bits of the environment here and there. So Nintendo does a decent job with that, making sure that it's family-friendly kind of co-op so everybody can participate and stuff. But, yeah, it needs to do more with a more serious co-op experience, I think, for people who want to get stuck into that.
Yeah.
Whew. Anyway, that was a lot of ranting this week.
Yeah, it was good. I'm happy.
We said a lot of stuff, and we can't take it all back because it was recorded.
I'll just replace every single word with butts.
But yeah, we might go to some music to finish things off, because music is good and good for the soul. What music did we pick? I'm trying to.
We picked some
music. Where's my notes? Oh my god, this is so embarrassing. Where's my notes?
This is the part of the show where Alan has to distract you with...
Ah, that's right. Pillars of Eternity. There we go. Yeah. There we go. Some music from Pillars of Eternity. Funnily enough, a game that could use co-op. Because Divinity Original Souls 2, or whatever it's called, has co-op.
Original Souls. Original Dark Souls.
And that was really good. Ooh, Dark Souls with co-op would be good too. But, oh, it does kind of have co-op.
It's in there.
It kind of. No, it needs like a proper co-op, like where you team up with somebody and go through the whole thing together, not just a ghost. I actually turn co-op off with Souls games because I like the whole lonely thing with that kind of atmosphere. But that's another discussion for another week. Pillars of Eternity 2, good music, good game, Pillars of Eternity, good music, good game, sequel coming out very soon. Thanks very much for listening, and we'll see you at the next week's podcast.
Bye.